Burckhardt knew that this was only a respite, and that Caesar would not allow them to escape so easily. Sooner rather than later, Clio would be following their spoor again. He scouted well ahead, and on the sixth day after the capture of Caesar's horses, he found the place ideally suited to his purpose. Here, a stratum of black igneous rock cut diagonally across the floor of a wide valley, through the bed of a fast-flowing river, then climbed the steep far side of the valley. The stratum ran straight and stood out as clearly as a paved Roman road, for no grass or other vegetation grew upon it. Where it crossed the river, it was so resistant to the erosion of the waters that it formed a natural weir. The river dropped over the far side, a thundering waterfall, into a whirlpool 20 feet below. The black rock was so hard that not even the steel-shod hooves of the horses left a scratch upon the surface. "Caesar will come back," Burckhardt told Jim, as they squatted on the shiny black floor. "He is a stubborn man, and you have made it a matter of his pride and honour. He will not give up. Even if he does not come himself, he will send others to follow you, and Gia will guide them." "It will take Gia many days and weeks to reach the Cape, and then return," Jim demurred. "By then we will be hundreds of leagues away." "Gia can follow a spoor that is a year old unless it has been carefully wiped clean."
"How will you wipe our spoor, Burckhardt?" Jim asked.
"We have many horses," Burckhardt pointed out, and Jim nodded. "Perhaps too many," Burckhardt persisted.
Jim looked over the herd of mules and captured horses. There were over 30.
"We do not need so many," he agreed.
"How many do you need?" Burckhardt asked.
Jim considered. "Drumfire and Trueheart, Frost and Crow to ride, Stag and Lemon as spares and to carry the packs."
"I will use the rest, horses and mules, to wipe our spoor and act as a decoy to lead Geo away," Burckhardt declared.
"Show me," Jim ordered. And Burckhardt set about the preparations. While Zama watered the herd above the black rock weir, Louisa and Jim fashioned leather booties from the captured saddlebags and the skins of the eland and rebuck. These would muffle the hooves of the 6 horses they were taking with them. While they were busy with this task, Burckhardt scouted downstream. He kept well up on the slope of the valley and never approached the river bank. When he returned, they cut out the 6 chosen horses and strapped the booties over their hoofs. It would not take long for the steel shoes to bite through the leather, but it was only a few hundred yards to the river bank. They secured the equipment to the backs of the 6 horses. Then, when all was in readiness, they assembled the entire herd of horses and mules into a tight bunch and walked them easily across the black rock. Halfway across, they held the 6 loaded horses and let the rest go on and start grazing on the far slope of the valley. Jim, Louisa, and Zama removed their own boots, strapped them onto the backs of their mounts, then led them barefoot along the black stone pathway. Burckhardt came behind them, examining each inch of the ground they had covered. Even to his eye they left no sign. The leather booties had padded the hooves. The bare human feet were soft and pliant, and they had walked slowly, not adding their weight to that of the horses. The hooves had neither scored nor scratched the rock. When they reached the river bank, Jim told Zama, "You go first. Once they hit the water, the horses will want to swim straight to the bank. Your job will be to prevent them doing that." They watched anxiously as Zama waded out along the natural causeway, with the water reaching first to his knees, then to his waist. In the end, he did not have to dive over the edge. The racing waters simply carried him away. He struck the surface of the pool 20 feet below and disappeared for what seemed to the watchers an age. Then his head broke out, and he lifted one arm and waved up at them. Jim turned to Louisa. "Are you ready?" he asked. She lifted her chin and nodded. She did not speak, but he saw the fear in her eyes. She walked firmly to the river's edge, but he could not let her go alone. He took her arm, and for once she made no move to pull away from him. They waded out side by side until the water reached over their knees. Then they stopped and teetered slightly, Jim bracing himself to hold her.
"I know you swim like a fish. I've seen you," he said.
She looked up and smiled at him, but her eyes were huge and dark blue with terror. He released his grip on her arm, and she did not hesitate, but dived forward and instantly disappeared in the spray and thunder. Jim felt his heart go with her, and was frozen with dread as he peered down. Then her head burst out of the creaming foam. She had tucked her hat under her belt, and her hair had come down. It streamed over her face like a sheet of shining silk. She looked up at him, and incredulously he saw that she was laughing. The sound of the waterfall smothered her voice, but he could read her lips. "Don't be afraid. I will catch you." He guffawed with relief. "Ha, saucy wench!" he shouted back, and returned to the bank where Buckart was holding the horses. He led them out one at a time. Trueheart first, because she was the most tractable. The mare had watched Louisa take the leap, and she went readily enough. She landed with a tall splash. As soon as she came up, she tried to head for the bank, but Louisa swam to her head and turned her downstream. When they reached the tail of the pool, the bottom shelved and they were able to stand. Louisa waved up at Jim again to signal that they were all right. She had replaced her hat on her head. Jim brought out the other horses. Crow and Lemon, the two mares, went over without any ado. The gelding Stag and Frost were more difficult, but in the end Jim forced them to take the plunge. As soon as they hit the water, Zama swam to them and steered them downstream to where Louisa waited to hold them, belly deep in the middle of the river. Drumfire had watched the other horses jump, and when his turn came he decided he wanted no part of such madness. In the middle of the stone weir, with turbulent waters booming around them, he staged a battle of wills with Jim. He reared and plunged, losing his footing, then regaining it, backing away and throwing his head around. Jim hung on as he was tossed about, reciting a string of insults and threats in a tone that was meant to sound endearing and soothing. "You demented creature, I'll use you as lion bait!" In the end, he managed to wrestle Drumfire's head around into a position where he could make a flying mount. Once he was astride, he had the upper hand, and he forced Drumfire to the edge where the current did the rest. They went over together, and during the long drop, Jim twisted free. If Drumfire had landed on top of him, he would have been crushed. But he threw himself clear, and as soon as Drumfire's head broke the surface, he was ready to seize a handful of his mane and swim him down to where Louisa and the rest of the horses stood. Buckart alone was still at the top of the waterfall. He gave Jim a brief hand signal to urge him on downstream, then went back along the black rock stratum for a second time, scrutinizing the surface for any sign he might have overlooked. Satisfied at last, he reached the point where the rest of the herd had crossed the black rock. There he worked the masking spell for blinding the enemy. He lifted his leather skirt and urinated, intermittently pinching off the stream between thumb and forefinger as he turned in a circle. "Eh, Pierre, you murderer of innocent women, with this spell I close your eyes so you cannot see the sun above you at noon." He let fly a mighty squirt. "Eh, Clea, beloved of the darkest spirits, with this spell I seal your ears so that you might not hear the trumpeting of wild elephants." He farted with the effort of expelling the next spurt, jumped in the air and laughed. "Ha, ha, Clea, you stranger to the customs and traditions of your own tribe. With this spell I seal your nostrils so that you might not even smell your own dung." His bladder empty, he unstoppered one of the diker horns on his belt, shook out the grey powder, and let it blow away on the breeze. "Clear, you who are my enemy unto the death, I dull all your senses so that you will pass this place without divining the parting of the spores." Then at last he lit a dried twig of the tong tree from his clay firepot and waved it over the spoor. "Clear! You nameless filth and excrement, with this smoke I mask my spoor that you may not follow." Satisfied at last, he looked down the valley and in the distance saw Jim and the others leading the horses away, keeping to the middle of the fast-flowing stream. They would not leave the water until they reached the place he had picked out for them, almost a league downstream. Buckart watched them disappear round the bend of the river. The horses and mules they were leaving behind as decoys were already spread out down the valley, grazing quietly. Buckart followed them, picked out a horse, and mounted it. In an unhurried manner, not alarming the herd, he gathered it up and began to move it away from the river, crossing the divide into the next steep valley. He went on for another 5 days, an aimless meandering through the mountainous terrain, making no effort to hide the spoor. On the evening of the 5th day, he strapped the hooves of the dead Reebok back to front, on his own feet. Then he abandoned the herd of remaining horses and mules and minced away, imitating the gait and the length of stride of the living Reebok. Once he was well clear, he laid another magical spell to blind Kia, in the unlikely event that his enemy had been able to unravel the spoor this far. He was confident at last that Kia would not find where the party had split on the rock, and that he would follow the more numerous undisguised spoor of the herd. When he caught up with it, he would find a dead end. Now at last he could circle back towards the riverine valley where he had parted from Jim and the others. When he reached it, he was not surprised to find that Jim had followed his instructions exactly. He had left the river on the rocky stretch of the bank that Buckhart had selected and doubled back towards the east. Buckhart followed, carefully wiping clean the light spoor the party had left. He used a broom made from a branch of the magical tong tree. When he was well clear of the river, he cast a third magical spell to confuse any pursuit, then followed at a faster pace. By this time he was almost 10 days behind Jim, but he travelled so swiftly that even on foot he caught up with them 4 days later. He smelt their campfire long before he reached it. He was pleased to find that once they had eaten the evening meal, Jim had doused the fire under a heavy blanket of sand, then moved on in the dark to spend the night in another, better protected place. Buckhart nodded his approval. Only a fool sleeps beside his own campfire when he knows he may be followed. When he crept up to the camp, he found Zama was the sentry. Buckhart bypassed him effortlessly, and when Jim woke in the first light of dawn, he was sitting close beside him.
"Samoya, when you snore, you shame the lions," he greeted him.
When Jim recovered from the shock, he embraced him.
"I swear to the Kulu Kulu, Buckhart, that you have grown even smaller since last I saw you. Soon I will be able to carry you in my pocket."